You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 18th, 2010. This is Bob Sprankle, and I am in North Station waiting for a train back to Maine with my daughter,
Zoe Sprankle.
And she's helping me get all these intros done for the Building Learning Communities podcast that will follow. So this one is Mitch Resnick, the first keynote that we saw on day one of the conference. Mitch Resnick from MIT, and talking about Scratch and so many possibilities. And Zoe, what was your takeaway? I know that was a couple days ago. What was your takeaway from the conference?
He showed a lot of different Scratch projects that kids had made all over the world. And there was this one girl, well, of course, everyone can do this, but she was one of the first. She was making a game, and all around the world, she had people contribute and help her and make new versions and have new ideas.
So that you can contribute and get help from people, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's awesome. I hope you enjoy this talk as much as we did, and we'll have more podcasts coming up tomorrow and the following days.
Is the most important resource of the conference, more important than the workshop presenters and the keynotes. It's your ability to work together, meet each other, share ideas, because you're the ones who have to do the heavy lifting of implementation. And so just to get started in the right frame of mind, I thought it would make sense for every other row to turn to the person behind them and say hello. Go ahead, say hello. People from all over the world, and having the opportunity, as I do, to give workshops around the world, I learn amazing things when I get out of this country. So if you meet somebody from overseas, either direction, I just think it makes sense to have an even longer conversation. Because, as you know, you can imagine that in different countries, they're not encumbered by some of our educational overhead, like No Child Left Behind, other things like that. So do build your international network while you're here. I was just looking at the distance of this crowd. The history of this meeting is it started off as a party with 25 friends of mine, and we met in one room for 3 days. And in that one room, we all brought books. And we bought file folders filled with articles we had cut out for the year. And we shared the books, we shared the file folders, and we created content for our students. And then the next year, some people invited some people, and Mr. Bob. And I have to show you, because I'm about to introduce Mitch Resnick, if you could show this little scanned image that I put up. I just want to show you, I found a 1988 calendar 3 days ago in my office. 3 days ago. And in the calendar, this is how I write. Thank God for word processing. In September 24th, 1988, I was going to meet with Mitch Resnick on Lego Logo. And I just thought that was an interesting juxtaposition of time and change. Certainly in 1988, we could not have dreamed about the kinds of things that Mitch has invented. And for those of you who are looking forward, and you want to think about being inventors and creating, there's absolutely no limit now, is there, in terms of what we can dream. At that time, we worried about processing speed, bandwidth wasn't even a conversation. We worried about memory and storage. We worried about lots of limits of the physical boundaries of the stuff that would prevent us from inventing what we really wanted to. Today, the only boundary is our imagination. All those physical boundaries have expanded so widely that the opportunity of invention and teaching our children that there is no limit to invention except their imagination, it's just an amazing change since 1988. So I just thought you'd be amused by my scratching. So we can take that off now. And so to introduce Mitch, I have to tell you, it's my opinion that Mitch's work is the seminal piece of teaching us that even without the structure of school, the children have a chance to get their hands on powerful tools connected to community that's global. Their work of individual work, but connected to community, will be more inspiring for children than if they only did their work on their own. And I don't know of another example that is this global in education with this much creative work being pushed up. Is it one project a minute on average? 25 hours a day, 7 days a week, every minute. A student is publishing for a worldwide audience. Now, sadly, I was chatting with Mitch, in the United States, in many of our schools, kids might be allowed to use Scratch, but they're not allowed to publish because of the filtering that we have. At some point, I think we have to get over that, and we have to recognize that the creative process involves publishing for other people to respond to inspire you to go on to your next level of creativity. So I think the only boundary today is our fear. I mean, if I could name one boundary in the United States, it's this amazing fear that we have of filtering children in community settings. So without further ado, because I really need to learn more myself, it is a huge honor to introduce Mitch Resnick to you. And today, I'm going to get this right, he is the Lego Papert Professor of Learning. It's interesting that it came in conjunction with the Lego logo, and I think you're absolutely going to be spellbound and inspired by Mitch's presentation.
Great to be here. We've had a great association with the Building Learner Communities Conference over the years. Had rich interactions from pre-conference workshops at our own MIT Media Lab to coming and interacting with you over the years, and I've always found a really dynamic community of people. So I look forward to exchanges today about different ideas about the future of technology and learning. You know, it was 18 months ago, I was in a similar large auditorium across the river where I work at MIT. And there were hundreds of people in that auditorium. And what we were gathered for that day 18 months ago was to watch on big screens the inauguration of the new president, Barack Obama. And as hundreds of MIT people were sitting in the room watching the inauguration on large screens, you probably won't be too surprised that at the following line, the MIT audience erupted in cheers when Barack Obama said, "We'll restore science to its rightful place," and the room erupted in cheers, as you might expect from an MIT audience. But that wasn't the line that caught my attention. As I listened to his inauguration, the thing that captured my attention was when Obama said, "It's been the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things, some celebrated, but more often men and women obscure in their labor, who've carried us up the long rugged path towards prosperity and freedom." And in particular, he talked about the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things. And in fact, that's exactly what I think we see as one of the most important goals of education, is how can we help prepare the next generation to be risk takers, doers, makers of things? As Alan was saying in his introduction, people these days are limited mostly just by imagination. And what we need to do is prepare people to be risk takers, doers, makers of things, creative thinkers, in order to really be full participants in today's society. A couple months later, Obama made his first visit to the National Academy of Sciences and was talking about science education. And he returned to a similar theme. He said, "Think about new and creative ways to engage young people in science and engineering, like science festivals, robotics competitions, and fairs that encourage young people to create, build, and invent, to be makers of things, not consumers of things." And again, the theme was to create, build, and invent, to become makers of things. And again, I really feel that if we're going to, you know, live up to the potential for tomorrow, we have to help people learn to become the makers of things. And this is where new technologies can make a big difference, but they won't automatically make that difference. And in my mind, one of the big challenges before us as we think about the role of technology in the world today, and particularly in the world of education, is we have to think about how can we help the students of today become makers of things in the digital world? That it's not enough, as Obama was saying, to be consumers of things. It's not even enough just to become interactors. People talk a lot, it's important to interact. Well, interacting is not enough. We really have to think about what it is to become the makers of things with new technologies. Well, you know, why is it that I think becoming a maker is so important? So for me, you know, being able to create is at the core of becoming a creative thinker. I mean, creating is at the root of the word creativity. And I think we all recognize that in today's society, creative thinking is more important than ever before. That we live in a society that things are changing more rapidly than ever before. There's more uncertainty than ever before. It's become almost a cliche to say that what you learn between the age of, you know, 6 and 18 isn't enough to last you for a lifetime. You need to continue to learn. You need to continue to be prepared for the unexpected, to be able to deal with unexpected situations and come up with innovative solutions. And that means what's more important than anything else for success in today's society, even more so in tomorrow's society, is to become a creative thinker, to be able to come up with innovative solutions to the unexpected problems that we know are going to arise in everyone's life. So this idea of how do we help people develop as creative thinkers, I mean, we even see it in our own work at a place like MIT. You know, 22 years ago, when Alan had it written in his notebook of that meeting about our early robotics work with Lego Logo, at that time, if you came to MIT, we had bigger, faster computers than any of you did, and that allowed us to do things that none of you could do. Today in my lab, we're using the exact same computers that you're using. So if we're going to do something creative and innovative, we better be using our imagination. That the difference isn't about whether you have a bigger, faster, more expensive machine, but how you can now use your imagination to think creatively and act creatively. So I think this idea of becoming a creator, a maker, is a pathway to developing your imagination, creativity. It's also a way to become a full participant. You know, when you think about literacy in today's world, with traditional language, we wouldn't consider someone literate if they could only read but not write. But that's the way most people use computers these days. They read on computers, they're great at browsing, they're great at finding some information they might need, but they aren't very good at creating with the new technology. So for many people with technology, it really is as if they can read but not write. And that's really, you can't become a full participant unless you're fully literate, being able to express your ideas, become a full contributor. Now some people might say, well, that seems strange. We hear so much about digital natives. Can't kids today, they're already being able to do all these things with the technology? Well, yes and no. It is true that, I think it's wonderful the way that many young people today feel great comfort with the technology, and they're quick to explore with the technology. But that doesn't mean that they can immediately and intuitively become makers and creators with the technology. And that's where we'll have to do a lot to support the next generation growing up, so they aren't just browsing and chatting and texting, but also becoming full creators and makers with the technology. And that has to do more with just writing on someone's Facebook wall. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and I think there's valuable things you can do with that. We need to go beyond that, going beyond texting and Facebook, to be able to create things with the technology so that people don't grow up just interacting with animations and simulations and interactive games. Not just to interact with that type of technology, but also to create it all by themselves, to express their ideas in many different ways. And that's what was really behind our work as we develop new tools to help young people as they grow up. We're always thinking, how can we give them new opportunities to express themselves, to design, create, invent, get their ideas out to the world, to write, not just read, with the new technology. And we saw that as we started working on the software called Scratch, which I'll be talking a lot about today. We've been doing a lot of work both in schools and after-school centers, and we saw that kids were very excited about interacting with all this new media, but they felt frustrated that they could play games, but they weren't able to create games. They could interact with animations, but they couldn't create it themselves. So we saw there was a real desire and demand from young people out there to be able to do more with the technology, and we also saw it as a great learning experience. And we saw that it was going to work best if they could use the technology to create as part of a community, to share their creations with others, to be able to learn from what other people had created. We didn't want to just create something that was in the spirit of the old Rodin sculpture where you're just sitting there by yourself thinking. We knew that the best learning was going to happen when you're part of a community, and the best learning was going to happen when you were creating as part of a community, of sharing your creations with others and seeing what others create. So I think we felt, all along, if we really want to build learning communities, which we really do believe in, that one of the best ways of building learning communities is to be cultivating creative communities. But how can we support people to be able to create with one another? And as people create with one another, that's one of the best ways for people to be learning with one another. So that was some of the motivations behind as we started working on Scratch. To give you a sense of what Scratch is about, I'll show you some examples. I'll start out with an example of a girl who started on the Scratch website when she was 12 years old. Scratch launched publicly about 3 years ago, in 2007, as a free piece of software. And kids around the world started downloading the software and creating things and sharing with one another. And early on, this 12-year-old girl, in the first year of Scratch, when it became holiday time, she decided to use Scratch to make her own holiday cards to share with her friends. So this was one of her first Scratch creations. So you can see it's an interactive Christmas card where you click on the different reindeer and each play a different animal. Okay. lots of sites on the internet where you can make posts, where you can get postcards to send to friends. But this is quite different. This is not just choosing it and choosing like the custom color for the background and sending it. This was all of her ideas. She came up and gathered the songs from the internet. She, you know, created the reindeer images, put them together, wrote the programs to make this come alive, and then sent it off to her friends, so her friends could go online and get the Christmas card from her. But this Scratch user, her username is MyRedNeptune. I'm not sure why she came up with that name, but MyRedNeptune started with this, but in doing this project, what she found that she enjoyed most was making the individual characters. So after this, she started putting up some Scratch projects that all they had were a collection of characters, or we call them sprites in Scratch. So she would put up projects like this that showed off the animated characters that she was creating. So she had everything from flying horses to running horses to different dragons and dinosaurs. But what was important was she didn't just put up these images. She said, if you like these images, please feel free to use these characters and put them in your Scratch projects. And other people started responding to her, giving her feedback about her artwork and making requests. Someone wrote underneath this, they said, actually, I'm working right now on a project and I need a cheetah. I want a running cheetah, but I don't know how to create a running cheetah animation. Can you make that for me? And then I'll integrate it into my project. So MyRedNeptune created this project. She went to the National Geographic website, got a video of a cheetah, and then made an animation modeled on that video. And this was for someone else, then used this and put it inside their project. And someone else wrote to MyRedNeptune and said, I love your artwork. You did a bird that I really liked, but I'd like to be able to do that myself. Can you let me know, how do you make a picture of a flying bird? So MyRedNeptune put up the following project. There was a tutorial, a step-by-step tutorial, where when you click on it, it goes step-by-step and it shows how she went about drawing the wing of a bird and showed how she then went through and showed how to animate this flapping wing of the bird. And again, when we started Scratch, we thought that we might be creating tutorials and putting them online. But we never imagined that 12-year-olds were going to start putting up tutorials to have other people learn how to do those things. Other people saw some of MyRedNeptune's characters and once used them in their own video games. So they asked to collaborate with her. So the next project I'll show is a collaboration of 5 kids in 3 different countries who worked together on this game. And they used the character that MyRedNeptune developed, but then someone else did the different things with the scenery, someone else did the gameplay and the interaction. And together, the 5 of them came up with this project. So it's one of those games where you go around, and if you're hungry, you have to go to the stove and get some more food, and then your hunger goes down. You can go outside and serve certain challenges. So this is a project that they put together, put online, and then lots of other people started playing the game and giving them feedback, and they did several versions of this game. So I think you can see, in a matter of just a few months, MyRedNeptune was doing everything from creating her own greeting cards, to acting as a consultant to other people, making the animations for them, to being part of an international collaborative team that was putting together games. In my mind, this is what it means to be a maker with new technology, that she was able to take her abilities with Scratch and be able to use them in many different ways, whether it was making a tutorial or making an animated story, making a greeting card, or working together on a game. Let me share a little about what it is that MyRedNeptune had to do with her colleagues to make a game like this. So I'll bring up the Scratch software. So here's the Scratch software, which again you can, you know, download for free from the Scratch website. And what you do is, over here in the middle column, these stacks of blocks are the way you describe the behavior for each of the characters or sprites in a Scratch story or game. So in fact, if I want to control this character here, I could pull out a block, like here's a block that says move 10 steps. If I click on this block, it says move 10 steps. You see that it moves. If I wanted to make a sound as it was moving, I could go to the sound category. Here's a block that says play drum. I could choose different drum sounds. Here's like a cymbal sound. I'll put this on. I'll drag this over here. If I click on it, is a cymbal sound. If I snap them together, I've made a little program. Now it'll both move and play a sound. If I want to make the walk repeatedly, I could just go and pull the block that says repeat and drag it around, say repeat three times, and now it'll start doing that. And here you can see some of the other, this is a stack that my Red Neptune or one of her colleagues put together. It says, when right arrow key pressed, it should do all of this. So this is a way to make your program interactive. And this says when I press the right arrow key, it should switch the costumes. So in fact, it makes the little, I'm gonna hit the right arrow key, and you see it makes a little walk because it says switch the costume, then take a step and switch another costume. So they created one picture that looked like this, and another that looked like this, and one that looked like this, and they just cycle through the three costumes as they make it move forward. So every time I hit the right arrow key, it does that, and we have a little animation. On the left arrow key, there's another stack here that says that the left arrow, it does a similar thing, but walks the other direction. So just by putting together these stacks of blocks, somewhat like putting together Lego bricks. And again, it's not an accident. We've had, as Alan mentioned, we've had a long association with the Lego company, and we've always been inspired by the incredible structures that kids can create by putting Lego bricks together. You start with simple Lego bricks, and you can make fantastic castles and houses and bridges from the simplest of Lego bricks. And we have the same theme here. Start with very simple building blocks to move, to change your costume. But then kids put together these simple blocks to make incredible creations. But instead of making structures in the world, as you do with Lego, here you can create behaviors. And you give different behaviors to each character in your story or game. And then together, that's how you make a story or a game. And for us, it's important to take away the mystery and the magic. Everyone these days is growing up interacting with animated stories and games online, but it's usually shrouded in mystery. How is it that someone could do that? I think we show here that kids get a chance to see that just by starting with simple behavior blocks, putting them together, they too can create interactive stories and games. But an important part is they didn't just create it on their own, but then shared it as part of a community. So we made central to Scratch from the beginning. You notice in the menu here, there's a menu that says share. So as soon as you create something in Scratch, whether it's a Christmas greeting card or a tutorial or a game like this, you can then click share and it'll immediately take your project and put it on the Scratch website. So this is the Scratch website, which is somewhat like YouTube, but instead of uploading a video, you upload your Scratch projects. So like here are some projects that were featured. We can see some of what the most favorite projects of the community, what the community is currently viewing, what the community is currently loving. So we see what it is that different, how the community is responding. And on each of these projects, as you saw, people can then try out the projects online, write comments, give feedback, engage in conversations around these projects. If you see a project you like, you can download it, see the blocks of code that show how it works. You can start making changes to it and upload your own version to it. So we see lots of examples where kids see something that they're interested in, then they make a version and put it up there, and then someone else makes a version of that. And these types of remixes are now a central part of the Scratch community. And that's an important part of creativity these days. Creativity doesn't just mean starting from a blank screen or a blank piece of paper, but it's building on the work of others. And right now, on the Scratch website, in the 3 years it's been up there, there's now more than 1 million projects that have been contributed by kids around the world. And about 30% of those projects, 300,000 of the projects, are remixes, where someone saw something they liked, made some changes to it, and put it up there. And of course, this sometimes leads to some disagreement. Someone will say, so-and-so stole my project. But that's an opportunity for discussion. We then say that, well, actually, in the Scratch community, it should be an honor to have your project enhanced by others. That's part of what being in a community is about. It's not about being protective, that you're the only one that can do this. It's about using it, and you should feel honored if somebody else takes yours and extends it. And then you should see, maybe you can extend what they've done. And in fact, on the homepage of Scratch, in order to make sure that those people felt honored, what we highlight on the homepage, what the community is remixing. So if you make a project, and lots of people make versions of your project gets highlighted on the homepage, because that should be an honor. So there's a lot about managing the community to show what the values of the community are. And one of the values of the Scratch community is sharing. And that we want to encourage people to share their projects, to build on one another's projects. And of course, you should give credit to other people, but you should feel comfortable with saying, that's a great idea. I'm going to try to use that and go and take it further. And we wanted this to be a global community. So within Scratch, you know, in this project, in fact, one of the contributors in this project was from Russia. And if you have people looking at each other's projects and working together, it's a problem if all the blocks are in English. So actually in Scratch, it's now been translated into more than 50 languages. So if someone in Buenos Aires or Madrid downloads this project, they can choose Spanish. And for those of you who can see the screen well enough, you can see all the blocks changed into Spanish. Or if you're in Israel, changing it to Hebrew. If you're in Shanghai, changing it to China. So kids around the world can see a project developed elsewhere, change the block to their own language, make a change, put it back up there, and then the original author can change the blocks back to there, to the initial language, and still be able to see the program and understand the program. So we really want to make this a global sharing opportunity for kids around the world to be able to do it. To be able to work together and collaborate with one another. Even just the way it was translated shows the power of the internet. You know, we just have a small team of developers in our group at MIT, and we certainly couldn't translate Scratch to 50 different languages, but we just put up a web page, and in Scratch there are a few hundred words and phrases. So we put up a web page, we listed all of the words and phrases in Scratch, and we said to the Scratch community of users, say, if you want to have it translated to your language, fill in this spreadsheet, translate all of the words and phrases of Scratch, and we'll add it to the language. So people around the world did the translations, and we then put it as part of it. So this idea of having the whole community together, participating in continuing to enhance and redesign Scratch, is part of what the Scratch community is also about. Let's go back and show a few other examples to give you a sense of the type of things that young people are doing with Scratch. Here's another one that was from fairly early on in Scratch. It was someone who had never done very much on the computer before, but loved to draw. And actually, that's one of the types of people that we really wanted to attract with Scratch. We didn't want to be Scratch. We didn't want Scratch only to be for people who are sort of naturally drawn to math activities and computer science and programming activities. We want to let everyone be a creator with the technology. And people who are artistically creative or musically creative, let them also create with Scratch. So this was a user, her screen name is Maho Ashley. And Maho Ashley, I think she was 13 or 14 years old when she started on the site. And what she started to do was she made a project. She loved to draw anime in her sketchbook. And she saw that with Scratch, she could make her anime come to life. So she started taking her anime drawings and turn them into animations, the way that we just saw before, flipping between the different images to make animations. So she started and she put up her first animation, and a lot of people responded. They really liked her artwork. So they encouraged her to put more things up. So she put another animation up, and then another, and then another. And she started doing it each week. Something like a TV series. So before long, Maho Ashley had a following and the equivalent of her own TV series. What I'm going to show you now is episode 1 of season 2 of what Maho Ashley was putting up. So this was recapping some of the things that happened in season 1.
And I think you can see sort of, you know, she clearly is very artistically talented. But she took her artwork and turned it into a narrative and sort of made storylines around the different characters. So here she's sort of reintroducing some of the characters and some of the things they've been through in season one. But one thing that really struck me was, beyond just the, you know, her learning to do the animations, is she also learned about being a part of the community. Again, part of it was that she learned that she got feedback from others and started making her own projects, sharing with the community on a regular basis. But then she went a step further. She started involving the community more deeply. She'd been introducing new characters to her weekly animations. And at one point she realized, well, why not get the community involved? And she put up a project, the following project, that asked people in the community to suggest new characters. So it was, this one says, design Izumiku's sister. So Izumiku was one of the characters. And she said, I'm asking you to design a sister for Izumiku. And she gave some requirements, like it must have blue hair, red or blue hair, it can have cat or ram horns. So she said some of the qualities she wanted in this character. Then she opened it up to the community. And dozens of kids started making different characters to contribute to it. So she was doing her own form of crowdsourcing, of saying, how can she make use of this Scratch community to involve them of contributing characters to her story? And again, similar to what happened with My Red Neptune, someone wrote to her and said, I love your animations, and I love the way you draw, but I can't draw that way. Can you show me how you do your anime? So Mao Ashley also then made her own tutorial that shows step by step how she makes her own anime figures. And again, we've seen over and over where kids are sharing their knowledge, whether sharing their knowledge of how to draw, or sharing knowledge of new programming skills they've learned, or new tricks that they've learned. Like when we developed the Scratch software, there's certain things we tried to make it easy to use to do lots of interactive stories and games, but some things aren't so easy in Scratch. Like if you make a game and you want to have a scrolling background, it turns out that we didn't put in the features to make that very easy. But some kids really want to have scrolling backgrounds. So if you go on the Scratch website and you search for scrolling backgrounds, you find lots of tutorials where kids have found how they can make scrolling backgrounds, and they're sharing their expertise with others. They're showing, here's how to make a scrolling background. We've even had tutorials where kids, you know, want to make their projects more popular on the website, how to get their projects featured on the homepage. So kids are even putting up tutorials about, here's how to get your projects popular on the Scratch website. So there's all different ways that kids are sharing their ideas with others in the community. Then when we started Scratch and released it publicly 3 years ago, initially it was used primarily by kids at home and in after-school centers. So both My Red Neptune and Mao Ashley were doing this out of home. And in the beginning, it wasn't so surprising. We didn't provide very many support materials to have it used in schools. And again, a lot of times people in schools need to learn about it to see how it might be useful. But over the last couple of years, we've started to see Scratch, you know, gradually get used more and more in schools. So I'll show a few examples of some of the things and some of the ways that we've seen that teachers are starting to integrate Scratch, and students are bringing Scratch into the classroom. So the first example I'm going to show is an international one. This is from a school in India near Bangalore, where the teacher taught Scratch to the kids, but then they used it in lots of different ways. So in this case, they were in a science class, they were studying the different layers of the earth. And one of the students, as a final report about the layers of the earth, made the following Scratch project. It's a type of guided tour to the different layers of the earth. So he's talking in his native language, which is Kannada, which is the language that's talked in the Bangalore area, spoken in the Bangalore area. So again, he's giving this guided tour. As he goes down, he explains what's happening at each of the different layers of the earth.
But he also is very, he wants to make sure there are different types of effects as you get to different parts. As you hear when he gets to the water table, you'll hear the sound effects that he got of the water table. So again, this was a way for him to share his knowledge of what he had learned in class. And again, this might be similar to the way that in many schools, kids might use a word processor for writing up a report about what they learned, or use PowerPoint to make a presentation. With Scratch lets you go a step further. You can make something more dynamic like this. It's easier to put yourself in it, recording your own voice, to mix different media together. But even more so, you can make it interactive, which really goes beyond the way most kids are creating with technology these days. So like the next example really takes advantage of the interactivity of Scratch. This was from a middle school in New Jersey. This was a student who actually had learned Scratch on his own outside of school, but then asked his teacher if he could use Scratch to do a final project. When they were studying in a social studies class, or history class, they were studying the island of Easter Island, or Rapa Nui, off the coast of South America. So he decided to do a Scratch project that was in the spirit of SimCity, where it showed the culture and economy of Rapa Nui, or Easter Island, by you interacting as a resident or an inhabitant of the island. So what you do is here, using the cursor keys, you move around your character. And since the economy is based on fishing, you have to make your own fishing rod. So you go to the tree and cut down a branch. When you cut down the branch, the god happiness goes down, because part of the culture of the island is that you have to protect nature. So you lose some point by cutting down a branch of the tree. But then you ease your hunger by going fishing. So again, this is a way for him to communicate what he had learned about the culture and history and economy of Rapa Nui, but also to engage his classmates to create something that wasn't just a report for the teacher, but something that could then others could use to learn more about Rapa Nui and to share their ideas about what they had learned about Rapa Nui. Here's one more example. This is from an elementary school. This was a 10-year-old where they were doing a science project. And he decided to use Scratch to do the science project in the following way. He made a Scratch project to test reaction time. So it was a very simple project where you click on a start button and then you wait until the screen changes color. And when the screen changes color, you click on stop. And the program measures the time between when the screen changed color and when the user clicked stop. And that's your reaction time. And you did this, it asked the user to do this several times, but then you also asked questions like, what sports do you play? How much do you weigh? And he put this online and then gathered data from around the world to measure people's reaction time, but to look for correlations to see how their reaction time might be related to other characteristics. So here's the project. And it gives an opening screen. And you click start, wait for it to change yellow, and then you hit the stop button. And then measure your time, ask you to do it again. And at the end, it will ask for this information about your background. Then after you had this project up for a few months, or maybe it was about a month, he put up another project that gave his results. So in this project, it says, this is a school science project. Problem, I wondered if people who play sports had faster reflexes. Goes into a hypothesis. I think that people who play sports have faster reflexes. I think that the more hours they play, the faster their reflexes will be. And then he goes down to his procedure, and then the data, he comes up with the average response time for sports players was 308 milliseconds. For non-players, 434 milliseconds. See the three graphs on the next pages. And he had these graphs where he showed the relationship between the sports, the amount of time you play sports, and reaction time. Now again, someone could have done this type of reaction, this type of experiment with a stopwatch, with a few kids in the classroom or in the neighborhood before. But by being part of a global community, he was able to reach out and collect data from many more kids from many different backgrounds to have a more diverse, you know, audience for his experiment and to be able to, you know, to be able to calculate things on the data much more easily than before. So it's a way that he was not just creating the experiment, but then also leveraging this worldwide community to be able to make it a richer experiment than it could have otherwise. So I think you can see that the community plays many different roles. It can serve as an inspiration, where you go on the website and you see a million projects that can inspire you to give you ideas. The community can act as an audience where you can put your product out there and people give you feedback. It can work as the community can be test subjects for a science experiment that you're doing. The community can be collaborators to work together with you as you're working on projects. So people in the Scratch community mix together creating and collaborating in many different ways. And we see that as the core of the best learning experiences is when it's creating, when it's combining the ability to make and create with the ability to share and collaborate. And Scratch brings those together. Let me tell you about one elementary school teacher and the way that she brought this into her classroom. Because she was interested, and I think I get especially interested when schools are using it this way, where they have Scratch as a type of basic form of literacy that then can be used across all disciplines. So rather than seeing it as just a computer science lesson in a high school or a technology studies, part of a technology studies course in the middle school. And of course, Scratch is being used that way, and I think it's fine to be used that way. And I get most excited when it's more just a way to let people express themselves. The same way we use language. We don't use language only in English class. What we learn about language, we use in history class, and science class, and social studies class. The same, I think, should be with the way we express ourselves with the technology. And that type of literacy is, I think, what was being developed in this school. It's in Minnesota, this teacher, where she teaches a combined fourth and fifth grade, and they use Scratch for all different types of things. So if they're doing book reports, they use Scratch to do their book reports. So here's when they're reading Charlotte's Web. One of the students did a book report of Charlotte's Web using Scratch. But again, it's not just communicating about the book. As she's doing this, you can see it's going across disciplines. In moving the pig back and forth, she's doing mathematical calculations to change the size of the pig. She's learning about artistic ideas about perspective as she moves the pig further back. So it's combining, cutting across, you know, literature, art, math. And in my mind, that's where the greatest power comes from, of being able to work on projects to help you learn across the disciplinary boundaries. Here's another project from the same class, when they did a field trip to a local wildlife preserve. All of the kids did their projects about the field trip in Scratch. So here's one of the projects where one of the girls was very concerned when she heard that the swans that were on the lake, some of them were dying because they were eating the lead pellets of some BB guns, where people have been shooting BB guns, and then it was then hurting the swans who might eat some of the pellets. So it talks about how we went to this wildlife preserve, we learned how swans, and how to learn about the swans, how the lead from shotgun pellets get to the weapons. When the swans eat the pond weeds with the lead in it, over time it kills them. So for her, this was a type of like public service announcement. So she did this as a project, but then she wanted to publicize this. She saw this as a real problem, so she put this on the website and started sending out messages to let people know about it. She wanted the local town officials to know we need to do something about this. So it's a way for her to learn about the ecological system, but also to become an activist within the community. Here's in the same class, in math class, they were studying things about probability, about flipping a coin. And rather than just flipping a coin and counting the number of times it landed heads and tails, one of the kids in the class made a Scratch project that was a probability test. And a picture of, and every time you hit the space bar, it would flip the coin one way or the other with a 50% chance, and then it kept track. Right now it's up to 9 heads and 10 tails. No, 12 heads and 10 tails. And they then did this, and in fact they made it go automatically, left it running overnight to see the next morning how many heads and tails there'd be the next morning. So this type of overnight experiment was part of what they were able to do, which you couldn't do just flipping the coin yourself overnight, or at least it's not highly recommended. So I think, you know, those are some of the ways that we see it entering into the classroom. And I was going to show a few quotes from this teacher from the class in Minnesota about some of the things that she felt that she and her class were getting out of the Scratch experience. So she talked about how, you know, I believe schools must teach students to be active shapers, not just passive users of technologies. Again, I think that's very in line with some of the core themes here at Building Learning Communities, of having everyone become an active shaper with technology. And she says, Scratch starts at a level where kids instantly feel successful as programmers, but they can also keep learning and applying increasingly complex skills. So this is capturing an idea that actually my mentor, Seymour Papert, always used to talk about the importance of technology having a low floor and a high ceiling, meaning that it's very easy to get started. You know, as she was saying, instantly successful while having a low floor. But then you should be able to do more and more complex things over time, a high ceiling. And I think that's a good way of evaluating technology. When you see a technology, looking at it and say, does it have a low floor? Is it easy to get started with? But does it also have a high ceiling that you can do many different things, you can do more and more complex things with it? Actually, I've also been adding one extra dimension to that metaphor. I sometimes talk about the fact that technology should have wide walls. And what do I mean by wide walls? I mean that it's not enough just to be able to do complex things with it. If it's a one-trick pony, and you can do complex things, but only a limited number of complex things, that might be great for some students, but not other students. And I think too many things in schools are that way, that a lot of things, I think oftentimes, especially in math and science classes, a lot of activities and curriculum are designed in a way that works well for some students, but others aren't so interested. I think the way that computer science has been introduced definitely falls into this problem. It's one of the reasons why computer science enrollments are dropping, both in high schools and colleges, because computer science has been presented in a very narrow way, about use programming to generate a list of prime numbers. Well, most people don't want to generate a list of prime numbers. They'd much rather be developing the type of things you see in Scratch. And that's what I mean by wide walls. The tools should enable you to do a wide range of different things so that it can do things that fit your interests. So that whatever the technology is, it's not just aimed at the interests of any one student, but broad enough that whatever interests you come with, you can use the technology and learn the important ideas, but learn about it in ways that connect to things you really care about. So the teacher, Karen, she then said that the students set design goals for their projects. They deal with logic and have to problem solve to fix program bugs. And that's also an important point, because as both Al and I were saying, I do think the key ingredient to success today is imagination and creativity. But it's not good enough just to have an idea. You need to be able to execute on that idea. And that's what she was finding her students could do with Scratch. They were learning how to think systematically. They allowed them to think creatively, but then reason systematically, to learn how to think logically, to put those stacks of blocks together. Because I do think that Scratch is easier than other programming languages, you know, much easier than traditional languages like C or Java. But it's still not trivial to get it to do what you want it to do. You need to be able to think logically and reason systematically. But those are important skills to be learning. We want everybody to learn not just to have the flash of imagination, but also to then be able to follow through and to think systematically to carry out their ideas. And finally, Karen said, there's a buzz in the classroom when kids get going on Scratch, a special intensity of ownership. And for me, that ownership and the excitement comes from the wide walls. The fact that you can do so many different things with it. That it's not just you get Scratch and everybody does the same thing with it. You can work on things that you care about, whether it's making a Christmas greeting card for your friends or your own animated TV show that comes up every week, or a public service announcement about some of the ecological dangers in your local wildlife preserve. No matter what it is that you care most about, it's a way that you can then express yourself with that. And I think it's important to note that this is not true of all technologies in the classroom. And we still see, I think, the dominant way that technology gets used in most classrooms today is to deliver information and to have kids consume information. That's not to say that there's nothing gained from that, but I don't think that's what's going to be most transformative. If we just let kids get access to information, that's good, but it's not the way that kids are really going to be prepared for life tomorrow. This contrast came to my mind when I was at a conference a couple months ago, and the speaker before me was talking about a new product they were developing at a software company in England. And at this company, they were developing a product that was based on a very popular set of books, the books about warrior cats. Actually, how many people know about the warrior cats books? So some people, not so many. Actually, these books is the second most popular set of children's literature today after Harry Potter. They've sold more than 10 million of these books. So the last of the books sold more than 1 million copies. It's more popular in Europe than in the United States, but it's starting to spread. But again, it's this popular set of books. And again, I think it's great, as with the Harry Potter books, it's got lots of kids reading and sharing ideas from these warrior cat books. But what this company in England was doing is they were creating an online world where you could go into this world and it would tell you further stories about the warrior cats. It had games about the warrior cats. So you could participate in certain games or challenges that would let you get to the next level to learn more about the warrior cats. And again, it was very nicely produced. It had high production values. And I think there were some things you might learn. There was some reading that was part of it. There's some interaction. It was a communal setting. Different kids could be part of it at the same time. It was a little bit like World of Warcraft, but with warrior cats. So kids were interacting with each other, and they were solving some challenges. There were certain things they were learning. But in my mind, I didn't think that that was what was going to make the biggest difference in kids learning or in their lives. And as he was giving his presentation about their fancy new software for the warrior cats, that was, you know, this big, you know, multi-million dollar production, there was this transmedia product, that's the buzzword these days, is transmedia. You take something that's in books and you turn it into software and turn it into a TV series. So as he was talking about that, I had my laptop, and on the Scratch website, I just did a search for warrior cats. And I found hundreds and hundreds of projects that kids around the world had created around warrior cats. So I saw projects, so this was a gallery, that somebody even put them in a gallery, this gallery called Warrior Cats Games and Makers. And again, this gallery on its own had dozens of projects all about warrior cats made by different kids. So I started to look at them. This is one, there's one where you make your own warrior cat and you can choose the color for the warrior cat, choose its eye style, put spots or stripes on it, choose the length of its fur. So there were some different ones where let you make a cat, choose backgrounds for where your cat's gonna live. There were others, there were games with warrior cats where you get to control one of the cats and you explore the environment and you can click on different things and learn about the vegetation and what's safe to eat and what's not safe to eat. And then certain things can transport you to different worlds. And then if you get attacked, there are different types of moves you can make to fight off your enemies. So again, here I saw that it wasn't kids just interacting in a world of warrior cats as this new software was, as this, you know, software by the, I just knocked over my word here, but I don't think it's causing any major damage. I always have some trouble. I move my arms a lot when I talk. It's one reason it's always nice to have a microphone you can wear. When they give me a microphone I can hold, I sort of tend to go like this, and you hear me about 50% of the time. So I have to watch out for the water here, I'm afraid. But you know, rather than just exploring someone else's world with warrior cats, here kids on the Scratch website were creating their own warrior cat worlds and then sharing them with one another. So in fact, this one was put on the website, and you can see some of the data. 556 people had looked at this. Two people had remixed it, meaning they took this game and created their own versions of the game. 141 people had downloaded it so they could see the code of it. And lots of people had commented. It's like someone just said, awesome. And then the creator said, oh, you should check out the next version. It was about, this was sort of an earlier version. So it was pointing them to where they could see a later version of the game. Another person wrote, oh my god, awesome. But then, hey, can you help me? I'm making a new age interactive warrior's cat game, a bit like yours, with different styles. I just don't know how to interact. I now get a passive jump, but to get onto different levels and talk to others, I'm stuck. Can you help me? So the author of this game says, you know, to talk to others, I just program the cat to say something and click. As for changing levels, I program it, and then explains how she did the different programming. So again, you get to see the community helping one another as they're working on these projects to share their ideas about these warrior cats. And again, I think this shows, again, kids work on things based on their own interests. These were kids who are passionate about the warrior cats. You know, I think it's a positive thing, since they're passionate about the warrior cats, they became more passionate about reading. But they also became more passionate about making. And they were creating things with the software based on the warrior cats, and also learning how to work within a community, how to work within the warrior cats community, or how to work within the Scratch community to share their ideas about warrior cats. And that idea of just building on the ideas of things that you really care about is something that we've seen over and over. And one thing that makes me really happy about the Scratch community is you see the diversity of projects, of kids using Scratch in so many different ways to whatever they're interested in. If they read a book they're interested, they create Scratch projects. Or if you see a holiday coming up, on 4th of July, a few weeks ago, we saw all the fireworks projects on the Scratch website. I got to see this firsthand last May on, I guess it was May 14th, it was the day before Mother's Day. I realized I hadn't sent my mother any type of Mother's Day card. So it was the day before, so I thought, well, maybe I should make a Scratch project to send to my mother as a Mother's Day card. But before making my own Scratch card, I thought, well, let me see what others have done. So I went to the Scratch website and typed in Mother's Day and saw a long list. There were literally dozens and dozens of Mother's Day projects that had been created in the previous 24 hours. So I started looking at them. And we saw some of them were rather simple cards. That's a rather simple, generic Mother's Day card, but very nice. Some of them were more customized, even if not quite as professional. So again, you can like personalize, put your voice into it. Some of the projects. Some of the projects I was really. Okay. Here's one where I really loved it visually, artistically. I thought this is a beautiful card. Even if the spelling in the title left a little bit to be desired. It even gives you a chance, you can click it to get a reply. So. And then some of them were more interactive. So here's one where, as you move your mouse across Happy Mom Day, it turns into different things, and it says, I love you and care for you. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. So of course, for me, I had a little bit of an easy way about it. So instead of making my own Mother's Day card, I just sent my mom links to all of these cards. And for me, it worked just as I had hoped, because my mom said, I'm so proud that I have a son that created a tool to let so many other children make Mother's Day cards for their mothers and make their mothers so happy. But I think with all of these, and one thing that we see is it's great to see this great diversity of different types of projects. And we've also been trying to see how we can make it even more diverse. So one thing we've been working on is how to get Scratch off of the screen. So we've just been showing now how you can do things just on the screen. But of course, we live in the physical world. It's nice to connect to the physical world. So we've developed other devices. This is what we call the Scratch Sensor Board. Let's you connect sensors to Scratch. You can have things in the physical world that interact with what you've created on the screen. So back when I visited Hong Kong, I saw this was a project they had made with it. So made the saw and used a light sensor. So as the hole goes above the light sensor, it detects as the saw is moving and then controls the characters on the screen. So it's a way to make your own interface devices. So you shouldn't be limited to just your own joystick or your own Wii controller, but make your own controller. If you want to have a project, so kids have done things, if they make a racing game, they use this to make a physical steering wheel where they can control their racing game with a physical steering wheel. Or here with this game where you use the straw, with the saw to control things on the screen. We've also worked with the Lego company, again, our longtime collaboration with them. They've developed a new robotics kit that we worked on with them called the WeDo. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this. It just came out maybe a year or so ago. As meant for somewhat younger kids, many of you probably are familiar with Lego Mindstorms. This is more for age like 12 and up, and it's used in robot competitions, like First Lego League. We're really, although it's great that Mindstorms is out there, we always want to try to reach kids even younger and let them do even broader range of things. Not just to make robots for robot competitions, although that's great, but also make storybook characters to put inside your story, to make story animated stories in the physical world. Where we've now connected Scratch to Lego WeDo so that kids could create projects like this. So here's one where you may build something like, in this case, building a submarine. And this has a tilt sensor built into it. So as you move the physical submarine, it controls the submarine in your game. So you can then control around the different obstacles. This game then also uses the sound sensor. So if you want to get to the cat, you have to make a lot of noise. And the sound sensor hears it and it opens up for it. So again, we see lots of new ways for Scratch to continue to expand, you know, in different directions. We've been very happy to see how the community just keeps on growing. This is the top line, is the number of projects created each month on the Scratch website. As you can see, it's been really growing. This is the most recent month, that's 60,000 projects in the most recent month. But divided by 30 days, that's 2,000 projects a day. Or as Alan mentioned, that's more than a project a minute when you get 2,000 projects a day. And you do see how it's been growing. And it clearly has some links to things in schools, because the dips in here are during the summer. I'm not sure my cursor is. But there are a couple of different dips there, probably from the last summer and the summer before. So you do see some less use during the summertime. The bottom line, by the way, is the number of remixes. So when people are taking someone else's project and putting up revised versions of it, so that's continued to grow as well, part of the collaboration that we see. But it's not just the numbers that are important to us. It's great that many people are using it, but I think what's most important to us is what people are getting from their experience. And for us, what it really comes down to is this idea of being able to think creatively, reason systematically, and work collaboratively. If I had to think about what are the most important elements to being able to be successful and happy in today's society, I think these are some of the core skills that are so important. And this is what we really try to support with Scratch, about being able to open up the imagination, let people think creatively, help them learn to reason systematically, to be able to put those stacks of programs together to make their characters do what they want them to do, and to be able to work with others. So that combination is what's so important. Actually, any one of those by themselves won't be nearly as effective as all of them together. And we've been happy to see that many of the young people in the Scratch community, you know, are recognizing, appreciating what it is that they're gaining from Scratch. So I'll show you a couple of quotes from different kids who shared these quotes on the Scratch website. Here's an 11-year-old boy that said, "I love Scratch. Wait, let me rephrase that. Scratch is my life. I've made many projects. Now I have what I call a programmer's mind. That is where I think about how anything is programmed. This has gone from toasters, car, electrical systems, and so much more." And that is one of the things we're hoping to get, to give people a new framework for seeing things in the world around them. It's not just about making Scratch projects, but to think about your everyday life in a new way. That I think, you know, when he walked up to a supermarket and stepped in, the door opened automatically, he probably had a new way of thinking about that. Oh, there's probably a sensor, and when the sensor triggers, it makes something make the door open. And you could think about that in a different way. Because one of the buzzwords these days you might have heard, or you probably will hear if you haven't yet, people are starting to talk about computational thinking. And what they mean by computational thinking is, it's not just learning the skills of a computer or learning the concepts of computer science, but learning a way of thinking that comes from interacting with the computer. So it's a certain style of problem solving and design that is connected with the way you deal with computers and ideas that come from computer science. So it's ideas that relate to problem solving, but ways that you can sort of put things together to create different systems and to debug them when things go wrong. And I think that's what he means when he says he's developed a programmer's mind. I see that as meaning that he's developed as a computational thinker. He starts to see the world around him, and when he sees a system in the world, whether it's a trolley car going down the road, or thinking or hearing something about something in national politics, he thinks about it in a different way because he has a programmer's mind, is starting to work as a computational thinker. Here's another quote. This is from a 13-year-old girl who says, "I like Scratch better than blogs or social networking sites like Facebook because we're creating interesting games and projects that are fun to play, watch, and download. I don't like to just talk to other people online. I like to talk about something creative and new." So for her, that's capturing what we were hoping to get from Scratch, is that it's not just about communicating, it's not just about creating, it's not just about collaborating, it's about all of those together. That the best things happen, not just when you create something by yourself, not just when you communicate with someone, but when they come together. Then we create things, it leads to better collaboration and communication, and you can have some of the best collaboration when it's about building and making something that you care about. So we're really trying to see how we can bring all of these together. This actually aligns with, I don't know if you know, there's been a research study this past year that's attracted some attention by a researcher named Mimi Ito from University of California, Irvine. And she did an ethnographic study of kids using technology. And she identified three dominant ways that kids are using technology these days. And she talked about it as hanging out, messing around, and geeking out. So hanging out is more just using your cell phone and talk to others. Messing around is trying out some new application, trying out something, trying out some new app within Facebook or on your cell phone. Geeking out is going deeper, creating things. And I think part of my message here is it's not just, although some of the aspects of building a program in Scratch, you hear about a programming language, sounds like geeking out. In my mind, the reason that Scratch has been popular, and the reason I think it's a good educational tool, is because you do all of these things. I think you're going to geek out the best when you're also hanging out. Kids like to be on the Scratch website and see what others are doing. You saw in some of the communication, they love commenting on each other's projects. They love trying new things, messing around, experimenting with new things. So I think the most effective technologies are going to be when they support all of these different forms of interaction, not just one or the other. I think sometimes things get too spread apart, and we just focus on one or the other, and it doesn't live up to the full potential. And trying to find the best way of linking it all together. And this can be a challenge sometimes, especially in school settings. As Alan mentioned before, sometimes schools have very sort of strict filters and blocks that make it difficult to interact online. So kids might say, create with Scratch, but they never get to see the great creations that others have made. Where they don't get to get feedback from a worldwide community on the things they've created. So they might geek out, but they don't get to hang out, they don't mess around with what others have tried in the same way. I think by bringing all these together is where we're going to get the most out. We also don't want to go to the other extreme. I think if someone is only just browsing the Scratch website and playing the games on the Scratch website, it's not living up to the potential either. It's not just about trying out what others have done, but becoming a maker, a creator of your own. Now, to support all of this, it does happen automatically. I think up till now, the early users of Scratch, like MyRedNeptune and Maho Ashley, they were some of the early adopters. They picked up a lot on their own. But for Scratch and other tools like it to live up to its full potential, it really needs support, often from educators like you, to how can we make the most out of this? How is it that we can help kids make connections to important ideas that come up as they're working on these projects? How can we connect it to meaningful and significant content? So to be able to support that type of creative support structure around Scratch is one reason one of my graduate students, Karen Brennan, created another online community specifically for educators. And this is called Scratch Ed. So, or it looks like Scratched. So it's for educators who are supporting Scratch in their classrooms or community centers or museums. So any adults or anyone who's supporting others in using Scratch. So if you go to the Scratch Ed site, you can share your stories and experiences of using Scratch. You can see lesson plans that others have created using Scratch across many different disciplines. It's So it's a way for educators to share ideas with one another and to learn more about ways of using Scratch. We've also been saying that it's not enough just to have an online community. People also gain a lot from getting together with others, as you're doing at this conference. You know, you might have connected online, but you're going to learn a lot in the next few days by being here together, by meeting up with other people, sharing your ideas in person. So we want to try to do the same types of things. Each year we have what we call Scratch Day. This is especially for young people, but also for educators, where young people get together to meet other local Scratchers. So people who use Scratch are called Scratchers. So what we did was we just created a website, and we said, we encourage everybody on May 22nd, that was the date this year, make your own Scratch event. And just by putting it up there, we end up with more than 100 Scratch events in more than 40 countries around the world. So kids got together to share experiences and meet others who shared their passion for Scratch. We have one of the events at MIT where we had kids get together and also educators get together to meet other educators who were using Scratch. Let me just show a little video from our Scratch Day at MIT, just to give you a sense of the spirit. Areas. You can just go and do different things, whether you want to do a workshop or play around with physical materials from Scratch. This was with the WeDo, controlling robots with Scratch. We had live coding in a big auditorium. Kids were like programming live. It was a spectator sport where they were talking about how they were solving a problem. And other kids would come to watch this and solve the program. This is a sensor board. About things they had learned during Scratch Day. There wasn't enough table space, but that doesn't stop people. The floor is just as good as the table. I think you get the idea. So I think, you know, again, we want to see that, you know, decide where it really is a social event, a program that can be decided that you're not just by yourself, but working with others, sharing your creation with others, learning from others. We want to get the idea of getting people together. We're having a Scratch conference next month, August 11th through 14th, just at MIT. We do have, if any of you are interested, we have a special discount for people coming to Building Learning Communities. If you register for the conference and type in the promotion code SCRATCH in all capital letters, you can get a $75 discount off your registration fee. If you want more, we have some cards up here with information about the conference if you want to come up. We also have other cards about Scratch Ed, the website, and Scratch. So feel free if you want to come to get more information about the conference. We're about to get the discount, you can come up and get that. We also work on new versions of Scratch. By next year, we hope to have a next generation of Scratch, we're calling Scratch 2.0. It'll be much more integrated into the internet, where right now kids are already sharing things with Scratch. We're gonna enhance, make it even easier to collaborate on projects online, be able to have Scratch projects interact with other social media, so you can grab different data from online, put it in your Scratch project, or interact with other online applications. So we hope to be able to show that to you next year. Let me just finish with giving a shout out to the people who on Monday came to the Media Lab at the pre-conference workshop and joined us for a Scratch workshop. So we really loved working with them. We had a workshop, just an introduction to Scratch, and then one with the WeDo Robotics. I'll just close by showing a couple of the projects that some of the educators from Building Learning Communities did in Scratch on Monday and then shared. These were just, as they were getting started, maybe given an hour to work on a project, you see the type of projects. Here was a Save the Animals game that was created where you type in your name. So I typed in Mitch, it says hello Mitch. So it was a very personalized game. And the Scratch guide is introducing the game. And I then have to go around and save the ocean animals, the sea animals. So I use the arrow keys to move around. And I have to pick out if I get points, if I save sea animals, but if I hit land animals, I lose points. So again, it was part of thinking about learning about different sea animals, which is something we use in the classroom. Well, here's one more example.
There was studying about Cuba and also learning about Spanish language. So putting in the sort of Spanish language over. So as a way to, again, sort of support the curriculum area of what was being studied, both in terms of different areas to be studied on language. So again, I'd encourage you to find opportunities. If you're interested to join up workshops like this, we have other opportunities. If you come to our Scratch Day conference, our Scratch conference next month, or other opportunities, join Scratch Ed and learn more from there. Here's some of the URLs if you're interested in Scratch or Scratch Ed or finding out more about the conference. Anyway, I hope all of you take a look at Scratch, but more importantly, think about the themes underlying Scratch. Scratch is just one of many tools. It's one that we are particularly fond of and we're really committed to. But I think what's most important is this idea of bringing together this creating and community, of what can we do to support those two things together, to make sure that the next generation of kids grow up both being able to be creators with the new technology, to express themselves, but also be able to work within communities of creators. Because I really think that's the only way that today's children will be ready for tomorrow's society that will require creative thinking more than ever before, as the only way that young people will really grow up to become full and active participants in tomorrow's society. Thank you very much.